The Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Resources this afternoon. Today we will be having public hearings and possible work sessions on several bills. And so Peggy, I'm going to let you just explain what we're going to do here.
Okay, you have in your handout, first of all, today's agenda, where we have three fee bills related to the Health Division of the Department of Human Resources. House Bill 2177 relating to environmental laboratories, House Bill 2174 relating to public swimming pools, and then House Bill 5030, which we started to hear a long time ago and we didn't have time, and that is the fee bill that is the bill that ratifies fees that have been changed administratively during the interim. We also have an agenda that shows the rest of the week, and that includes a work session on the Health Division's budget tomorrow, and God willing, and that I can get the papers ready, a work session on the health plan and the Insurance Pool Governing Board on Friday, and then you have Thursday, yeah, and then you have some information on each of the bills as we go along. Also, you have a letter from the Umpqua Regional Council of Governments that Senator Fisher asked be distributed that relates to yesterday's topic. Senate Bill 764, I believe it was. For the first bill that we have up today, House Bill 2174, I've attached just a very brief summary of what happens in each section of the bill. The staff measure summary that came out of the House Human Resources Committee where this bill was referred from, a fiscal impact statement, and then on the back of that I've copied some pages out of a Health Division budget document that relate to Policy Package 131, which is partially, I guess, still funded by this bill had it come out the way it was originally presented. And so those are things to refer to, and then the agency will present, the Health Division has people here to present more information on the bill.
Okay. Good afternoon. Thank you for the record. Trustee Tubb and committee members, my name is Eleanor Hall, and I'm the administrator of the Health Division. And one of the Health Division's responsibilities is to license public pools and spas. These range from large aquatic facilities to small motel pools and athletic clubs and health clubs where there's a hot tub or a jacuzzi. Those are also licensed by the Health Division. This bill concerns the fees that the Health Division charges for the inspection and licensing services and also for the plan reviews that we do pursuant to state statute when someone wants to build a new pool or spa. We consider these very important public health services, and I would like to turn the further testimony over to Tom Johnson, who's the administrator for the Center for Environment and Health. He will give you more details about this bill, 2174.
Senator Keacub, members of the subcommittee, I'm Tom Johnson, an assistant administrator in the Oregon Health Division, and we're here in support of House Bill 2174-A. This bill has a long history, which should be briefly shared with you so that you can understand the perspectives on the ramifications of passage of this particular bill. The Health Division is responsible for carrying out the ORSs, which relate to the swimming pool and spa licensing programs of the state. Public pools and spas include large aquatic centers operated by special districts, as well as motels, hotels, and small pools. They also include hot tubs and jacuzzis in athletics, clubs, and spas. In 24 counties, the local health departments have asked to carry out the responsibility of inspection and licensing these pools, and we've delegated this responsibility to them. Those counties set their own licensing fees, which range from approximately $100 to $355 annually, but they operate under the administrative rules and policies directed by the State Health Division. Several counties have not chosen to inspect public schools, pools, and in those counties, the health division sanitarians carry out the direct services. These counties include Lake, Pawnee, Union, Grant, Wallowa, Gillian, Morrow, Wheeler, Wasco, Sherman, Umatilla, and Clark counties. The fees we charge are set by statute and at present are $100, and these fees have not been raised since 1983. For some time, we've known that the fee revenue from the swimming pool licenses and plan reviews have not been keeping pace with the cost of operating our swimming pool safety program. For over a year now, we've been working with the affected parties to develop a fee package that has support. Our swimming pool advisory committee, made up of pool operators, pool builders, county inspection staff, and the public, supported the need for fee increases and specifically supported the fees contained in the original House Bill 2174. House Bill 2174 was introduced at the request of the Health Division. At the first hearing on the bill, we discovered in the hall just moments before the hearing that two important organizations, the Oregon Lodging Association and the Oregon Special Districts Association, were opposed to the bill. There was representation from both of these organizations on our swimming pool advisory committee, but obviously that representation wasn't effective. At the hearing, we asked for time to try to reach agreement with these two organizations. We worked hard to develop a compromise fee package and believed that agreement was very shortly at hand. In the end, however, agreement was elusive. The fee increases were deleted from House Bill 2174, resulting in the A and Gross version, which is before you here today. The fee components of the original bill were removed, and only the remaining provision is a change in the method in which revenue from county fee-supported programs is transmitted to the state to support that portion of the costs with a statewide standard setting, technical assistance, and program oversight. We do want this bill to pass in order to implement that provision. However, we ask that this committee consider restoring the original language of the bill to permit the inspection fee increase. It is important to describe the services that the Health Division has been providing and how the decision not to increase pool inspection fees will potentially impact those services. Administrative rule calls for two inspections per year for year-round public pools. Without a fee increase, we will be able to provide only approximately one inspection per year. Administrative rule requires one inspection per year or seasonal public pools. Without fee increases, we will be able to provide approximately only every other year an inspection. Public pool closed for rule violations may be closed for a week or more until inspectors are able to return to those mostly rural parts of the state. This may result in some pools being closed during peak season use. We will have insufficient staff to handle plan reviews to build or remodel pools in a timely manner. We anticipate plan reviews will backlog, and approval may be delayed several months toward the end of the next biennium when all staff time for this function has been exhausted. This may result in construction delays and some pools not opening in time for peak season activity. From a public health perspective, pool safety programs are an essential element of protecting the public from disease and injury. Although they may seem innocuous, improperly designed swimming pools are sources of serious head and spinal cord injuries, as well as drowning. Improperly maintained swimming pools are the source of serious disease outbreak that in some instances result in the death of children. Our experience has shown that frequent inspection to verify adequate disinfection of the water and the safety of the facilities is a valuable disease prevention and injury prevention program that pays for itself many times over by preventing costly illness and injury. as well as maintaining the confidence of the public in the safety of public swimming facilities. We would be happy to answer any questions that you might have about the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many children have died in swimming pools as a result of not being properly maintained?
Chair Q-Tub and Senator George, I don't have that number exactly with me nationwide, but just this March, one died in Washington County. Last summer, there was an outbreak of cryptosporidiosis in a swimming pool in Portland. About 3 years ago, there was another young child that was trapped in a return drain in a swimming pool in Bend. So there are probably on average in Oregon one per year. Nationwide, it's much more than that.
Thank you.
Thank you. What are the actual fee increases that you had wanted to propose? You say they're $100 now. What had been the recommendation or what for?
Chair Q-Tub, Representative Ross, we had gone to a fee structure where at present it's basically $100. We had wanted to spread that out into really a four-tiered system. So the year-round pools, the first pool that you went out and inspected was $365. The second pool was much less. Let's see if we can find out what that is. Was $175. For then the seasonal pools, that is those that are just open basically during the summer months, the fee was $200. And then for the second pool, if you're at the same facility and they have an additional pool, that was $125. So there was a four-tiered structure that we had recommended. Those fees, by the way, are very consistent with those counties that we delegate this authority to who have done a cost analysis and set their fees according to that.
And following up, and the organizations that were opposed to this, did they think that no fee increase was needed, or did you disagree on the amount?
Chair Q-Tub, Representative Ross, I really hesitate to speak for them, but if I understood their position, it wasn't that they weren't supportive of an inspection program and supportive of the need. What seemed to be their position was that going from $100, which was set in 1983, to $365 for the largest, most expensive kind of pool that would be under that four-tier system, it's just simply too much to handle at one time. We honestly tried to go with a phase-in package and put forward a number of alternatives to try to soften that impact. But for whatever reason, which I really can't speak to, we simply were not able to come to an agreement.
Mr. Strobeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me who were the representatives from the Lodging Association and the Special Districts Association that were part of the work group?
Yes, I can. Mr. Scott West represented the Lodging Association. Representing the special districts, there were really two individuals, Doug Brenner and Steve Cable. Steve Cable more directly. Scott Brenner was an operator of a special districts pool, but Steve Cable was their more direct representative.
From the
Special Districts Association.
And was he selected by the association as a representative?
Senator Q-Tub, Chair Q-Tub, and the Representative Strobeck, that's a question which I myself am not exactly clear about. And in fact, I should say that we have had subsequent meetings with the Special Districts Association. They and we both agree something went drastically wrong.
Okay.
We don't know exactly what all and wherefore, but we can say that they have agreed to, in earnest, meet with us during the interim, if that's what turns out, to try to work on an agreed upon package. There, I think it's clear to say, I think I'm not overstating it, to say that they understand the need. Things just didn't work out. We don't really understand why, but there is some commitment from that organization to work.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could follow up.
Go ahead.
If there was a series of meetings and it resulted in an agreement that then was brought forward, but these organizations were not in agreement, my experience in working with the Minot Scott West, I don't know these other two people that you mentioned from the special district. I would be surprised to have that kind of deal fall apart if there really was agreement. And then I subsequently learned, just as you said, that there now is agreement from the association management, maybe not from an individual park district, but from the management of the special district association, to come up with an equitable plan that they would be supportive of next time. And I don't think it's... I feel very uncomfortable being asked to vote for a fee schedule that the substantive committee rejected and that we don't even have a copy of, as far as I can tell. And also I wanted to just ask you about the... Is this designed to be only a self-supporting program?
Chair Q-Tub and Representative Strobeck, yes. For as long as I've been around, this has been a self-supporting program. That has been, I think, a principle which we in the Health Division, LMA, wish to speak to that, have operated under, that these programs are entirely fee-supported. There is no general fund that goes to them. I really can't speak to your early point about Scott West, exactly what went wrong. I really can't, but I can say that, unfortunately, we were not able to reach that agreement.
Thank you.
You know, we certainly all want healthy swimming pools and spas and so on. But, Madam Chair, I guess my question would be of you, since Representative Strobeck brought up the idea. I know that we have representatives from special districts here that might be prevailed upon to comment, too, about how they feel about the kind of agreement that Representative Strobeck was talking about. I mean, it always makes me comfortable when I hear somebody talking about a group that's already represented in the audience rather than having them speak for themselves.
You interested in that? Didn't want to put you on the screen.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Maybe to shed some light on the process that special districts has traditionally used or is used to using when working with state agencies, particularly on fee increase issues. Traditionally, state agencies will contact us through the special district, through the lobbying staff or the executive director of the association and request that their representatives sit on that committee or go through one of the several of the special district types have their own associations, like the Parks and Rec Association, and potentially the association could then appoint some sort of representative who would then communicate the wishes of the entire Parks Association to the Special Districts Association. In this case, that was not done. I'm not familiar with one of the names of the persons that sat on the committee during the interim with the Health Division. One of them, though, Steve Cable, is an aquatics director for Willamette Lane Parks and Recreation District, which is in Eugene, in Springfield, Oregon. And that district would not be affected by many of these fee increases that are contained in the bill. Our objection to the fee increases is not an objection to any fee increase. It's just the discussions that took place over the interim did not involve what we feel is a thorough discussion of the parks and recreation districts that would be affected by this fee increase. Some of the fee increases that were proposed were up to 575% fee increase ranging from 83%, 225%, 191%, 100% fee increase. And the districts that we're talking about that would be mainly affected by the fee increases in this legislation reside in Umatilla County, Union County, Wasco County, Harney County, Grant County, Morrow County, and Clatsop County. And many of those districts, and for instance, Pilot Rock Parks and Recreation District, I don't know if they have a pool, but the total amount of taxes that they extended for 1997-1998 fiscal year were $6,807. So many of these districts are operating under with budgets of under $100,000. So when you start talking about a fee increase of 100% or even 500%, that would raise some eyebrows. We have had no communications from any of our district, any of the districts that would be affected by this legislation in support of it. We oppose the actual fee increase, but have committed to work during the interim with the Health Division through the Association and the Parks and Rec District Association on finding an equitable, reasonable fee increase structure.
So would we need the passage of this bill without any fee? I mean, if there's no fee language in this bill, that's fine, but does this bill actually do anything for you through the interim, or would you prefer that we hold this, you come back with a whole different bill the next time?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is up to you. We have no objection to the bill as written with the fee language stripped out and this portion in, and it's my understanding that the Lodging Association doesn't have any objection to the bill that's currently in front of you.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Madam Chair, I think the section that the Health Division might want to focus on and the committee might want to focus on that makes them continue to want this bill is Section 4. And the rest of it is pretty much changing, you know, adding public wading pools to existing, to the pools that they inspect. You can see on my little summary here, most of the sections are simply adding the word public wading pool to existing steps. In effect, what the A engrossed version of the bill does is strip out all of the fee changes and civil penalties that were in the original version, but does leave in Section 4 the ability of the division to collect some fees for the counties that have delegated authority. And where there is agreement with the Conference of Local Health Officials on what those fees should be.
So there has to be agreement with the local health officials, and they would come in and decide what that structure is. Okay. Representative Strobeck?
Well, and I think that begs the next question. Have you talked to the county people who have opted to do this and asked them if they're willing to start signing over some of the money that they've been keeping?
Chair Kutub and Representative Strobeck, we have county health department consensus on this bill, the way it is structured, and yes, it would result in them providing more money for the central functions of the state oversight. That they, of course, would object strenuously to being asked to subsidize the inspections that go on in other counties on their own, but they do agree that the current formula is not the best fairest way to apportion the cost of central administration.
Okay. I can buy that if I could just follow up then. Is the license that the counties issue, is it a state license or a county license?
Chair Keith, Representative Strobeck, it is a county license. We delegate that authority to them. They set the fee. They issue the license.
So why would... What role then does the state health department have? And I could see if they were, like in the case of truckers or something, where you authorize a third party to sell a state permit, I would think that you would be selling or authorizing the counties to issue a state permit.
So what is it that they're getting for
exactly.
What the state does?
Yeah.
Chair Kutub, Representative Strobeck, what we delegate to them is the inspection and the enforcement component of this pool safety program. What we retain at the state level is the standard setting, the technical assistance to them to provide uniformity statewide, and the oversight of the program to ensure that, in fact, they really are carrying out the program according to the conditions which we delegated to them for. So to carry out that component of the program, which is a statewide component. Again, because there are no general funds, we turn to the counties to whom we have delegated that responsibility and ask in return that they provide a very small component to fund that statewide oversight responsibility.
Could I ask another one?
Sure.
If these counties were to suddenly quit doing this and you had to pick it up, is this a profit center for those counties? Or I just don't understand why they're willing to turn over some of this money for essentially you setting standards and telling them to do it.
Let me take a try at it. Chuck, you have the representative Trebek. I think that there is a pride within each county to do things locally, to have things done in a way which meets their particular need, but yet has some statewide uniformity. They would like to have that as part of their local public health protection program. They like that because it makes a complete package of public health. What they are willing to do in order to get that is to agree to abide by statewide standards and to share a portion of the fee which they charge and with the state to fund that statewide standard setting, technical assistance training, and systems oversight responsibility.
Okay.
Mr. Pulse was here from the Association of Oregon Counties, and so that we can be clear and not be mistaken about an agreement that people thought they had, if you could comment, Gordon.
For the record, Gordon Fultz with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I also work with the Conference of Local Health Officials, which you've mentioned here. And we have reviewed this section. We have worked with the Health Division on it. We are comfortable with the language. It does call for the state as well as the counties to work together in coming up with those particular fees. And we do look forward to the technical assistance that's provided under this particular proposal. So that's the reason that we're comfortable with that provision.
Okay. Great. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
I had a question for Gordon.
Representative Ross.
Excuse me, Gordon, I'm starting. Have you been in contact with any of these counties that are, in fact, subject to state inspection? Are they concerned about the level of inspection they'll be receiving or the safety, their public safety issues?
Ross, yes, we came into the session supporting not only what you see in the bill, but also the increases that were proposed by the division because of that concern, mm-hmm. that there'd be some kind of level that was uniform across the state.
Mm-hmm.
But we are willing to work with the division as we go through the interim to see if we can't find bring everybody else on board.
And so from your point of view, since these are small counties, probably fairly small operations, you're not seeing a big hazard to safety in waiting another 2 years to come back up to a level of regular timely inspections?
Madam Chair, we have not heard from any county that was concerned immediately over the issue. The health folks that we deal with oftentimes obviously have the program. They're the bigger counties where at least there's an ability to pay for the program at that level. Not to say that that's not where there's some interest, but there's probably not as many pools in some of those smaller areas as there are in some others, so that may be useful.
Thank you.
Hmm.
Okay,
right.
We're probably spending too much time on this bill, but why have some of these smaller counties chosen not to do this? I'm sure they could hire on a per-job basis somebody who does this in a neighboring county or somewhere else and take charge of the program themselves, as Mr. Johnson said, then they have the pride of running their own program.
Madam Chair, Representative Strobeck, we've encouraged some of the counties to look at districting or parceling some of this out, but in some way, Gillum, Sherman, or Wheeler, I mean, they may or may not have but one pool in the entire area, so it would not be at all advantageous, even with the three of those coming together, for instance, to pull that program together for those counties. But in some other areas, we are still encouraging that kind of thing to at least be looked into.
Your definition of public swimming pool is a motel swimming pool, isn't it? Or not? Or
Madam Chair, Representative Kutub, it's those that serve more than four families, even a large apartment complex that serves more than four it would, or something that's part of a hotel motel, YMCA, municipal pool, special district pool, high school pool, where the public is frequenting that facility.
So I bet you even in Sherman County, there's a few motels that have some pool here and there.
I'm sure. You go back, I'm hard-pressed to think of. I'm sure there's one. This wouldn't be worth a program to have that one.
Representative, there are some that have as many as six. Some counties only have six pools.
Any other questions?
Saturday. So are these pools being inspected by local health officers?
Madam Chair, Senator Dee, that's correct. Yes, we have where the county has assumed the program, then they hire their own inspectors. Usually it's within the program that they have, the health program that they have.
Mm-hmm. So help me understand, why do local health officers have to send money back to health division? I know health division sets up the standards, but once standards are set up, there shouldn't be any costs involved.
Which I think he answered that to Representative
Stroker. Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we look to the standardization, which we understand is one of the requests and requirements of the state program. Two, the technical assistance is provided by the state level to our local levels is very valuable as well. And the program and what the elements of it that we look forward to, we work with the division to define. And we also, in this proposal, will work with them to define how much of a contribution we will give back to the state for that service.
Yes, but, Madam Chair, I thought once the standards is set up, you don't need technical assistance anymore.
Madam Chair, or Senator Yee, remember, some of these counties really are very small. They've got one sanitarian out there doing a whole bunch of things, only one thing of which is inspecting swimming pools, and sometimes they may have as few as 10 or 15 pools. Those individuals, in order to maintain their competency, need some training periodically, need some oversight, need somebody to go out with them and sort of standardize them from time to time to make sure that they're continuing to provide the quality of inspection that is needed. Swimming pools are really quite complicated pieces of equipment with disinfection, with the circulation system, with standards for equipment that is there to ensure that injuries aren't incurred from diving or slipping on slippery decks. It takes about an hour and a half to do a swimming pool well in terms of an inspection, and many times the water quality, water chemistry aspects of that inspection are something that you need to maintain skills for. And these one sanitarian operations really need outside technical assistance to help them maintain those skills.
Oh, another question. So wouldn't it be more straightforward if they just pay for a workshop? If you have an annual workshop, they just pay for the workshop for the training rather than pay you a part of their fees.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, we do that. Each year we do put on a workshop where we bring them together, and that's what pays for that workshop. But in addition to that, our experience has been going out individually with these inspectors and helping them go through the process, seeing how they do it, giving them feedback, also has proven to be an essential, very useful part of that state oversight responsibility.
Well, another question. So does this have to be done every year, or once they're trained, they should be pretty much knowledgeable enough to do it?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, it's an individual thing. It certainly is. The initial training is much more intense than maintenance.
Okay. Further questions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If there are no further questions.
And Chair, if you go into work session, I'll move the bill.
Okay. We're in work session for House Bill 2174. Okay. Same growth.
Madam Chair.
Representative Stroka.
Does this need to go to the full committee or just to the floor, the House floor?
Full committee.
Okay. I move that House Bill 2174 go to the full committee as printed in the Ian Gross bill as a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Strobeck has moved to the full committee with the do-pass recommendation. The printed Ian Gross House Bill 2174. Is there a discussion?
I have a question. So there's no set fee schedule except it's upon agreement among the parties.
No, the law changes. Madam Chair, there is that you do retain the original fee schedule that they've had since 1983 in the original bill. This bill does not amend the existing fee schedule.
So any increase would have to be agreed upon among the parties named under Section 4?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that would only be for those counties with delegated authority that would that pass through an administrative component in the fee that they charge. But in terms of the other fees that are in the bill, I think in Section 2, and 3 primarily, those fees don't change.
Madam Chair, I think if I could clarify the way I understand it, the $100 fee remains in effect for those pools that are inspected by the state, and the other fees are set by the county where they have delegated authority, but they agree to give a part of that back to the state in a side agreement, and this bill in Section 4 instructs the health division, along with representatives of special districts and lodging and so forth, to come up with a new fee schedule for the next session.
So there's no increase.
So we're holding off on a new fee increase for those counties where the state is doing the inspection until they come back with a recommendation.
Is there any objection? Hearing and seeing none. House Bill 2174 goes to the full committee. Do we have Carrier? Okay. First, Andy Brown. We need a Senate Carrier. Are you sure we can carry it? Oh.
He's just watching.
I'm sorry. Senator George, are you carrying it? Sorry.
I've gotten caught once or twice before on this. I've been able to rise to the occasion.
You used to make those assignments when they're not even here at all.
Madam Chair, tomorrow when we do work session on the Health Division, you will note that there will be some adjustments that I'll be proposing to Package 131 to reflect lower revenues and lower expenditures than are in the budget.
Madam Chair, I was working on water-related issues anyway. I have a water right, and I was trying to arrange the final examination by the water examiner to show that I was using it for a reasonable purpose. And I remember it kind of a deadline.
So you were working on water, too, huh? Well, probably a little bit different kind, but...
Well, I don't know. I'm probably more than these guys.
All right. We'll open up a public hearing then on the King. Oh,
177. Sure.
Okay, on House Bill 2177. Peggy? I apologize for skipping over. I guess that all it does is show that I can count that 74 comes before 77, but I didn't think of that when the agenda was being made, so I apologize. This is a bill that is related to the establishment of standards for laboratories seeking accreditation and performing environmental testing for a fee. And compliance with environmental rules and regulations, and the division can address this in terms of explaining the bill. It is related to a policy package in the division's budget, which would be policy package 122 in the Center for Environment and Health. Okay.
Jesse Tubman, committee members, we're pleased to present a bill which we hope will have less controversy than the previous one. This is a bill that's the result of work with laboratories, environmental laboratories in Oregon, including the Association of Environmental Laboratories, and also the Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Agriculture, and the Division of Health Services. And Mike Skeels, who's the director for the Public Health Laboratory, would like to tell you in more detail about what we're proposing to do.
Chair Chutep, members of the subcommittee, thank you. For the record, I'm Mike Skeels. As Ellie said, I'm the director of the State Public Health Laboratory, which is part of the Health Division. You have my written testimony. I won't read it, but I'd like to hit some of the high points if I can. We're here to provide information and support for House Bill 2177A, which was a pre-session filed bill of the Health Division. And as was just said, it would create an accrediting authority for voluntary participation by environmental testing laboratories. Just a little bit of background. At the current time, environmental testing labs in Oregon are regulated only when they're testing drinking water under an approval program, which we administer at the Health Division in a partnership with DEQ and with the State Department of Agriculture. The way this works is that private environmental labs test community drinking water supplies on a regular basis. They do the monitoring in their communities for chemical and bacteriological contaminants, everything from pesticides and herbicides to chemicals that would result from contamination from degreasing or gasoline or one thing or the other, all the way to bacteria that could be harmful to people. And they report the results of their tests to the Health Division's drinking water program. Sorry. Thank you, Senator Schultz. What they do then is they test these samples periodically, and they report their results to the Health Division's drinking water program, which is in the Center for Environment and Health Systems. The Environmental Protection Agency requires nationally that any lab that wants to participate in testing a public...
I'm sorry, we're having problems hearing this testimony.
Is this microphone better?
It's fine. I think it was the sidebars.
Madam Chair, I really don't want to start over, but I will if you...
No, no. You're fine. Keep going.
Thank you. As I was just saying, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency requires that any laboratory in the United States that wants to test community drinking water supplies has to be certified. And currently, the Health Division accredits those laboratories. But that's where it stops. If you're an environmental testing laboratory and you want to test hazardous waste or air or solid materials or sewage or streams or rivers or any of those sorts of things, there's currently no kind of accreditation nationally nor any kind of regulation in Oregon for those laboratories. And just to say it a different way, they're not regulated either by the state or the federal government. However, a new voluntary program called the National Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program has been created at the federal level, with EPA being the lead agency. And the way this works is they convene a lot of private environmental laboratories nationally, plus federal and state folks, and they came up with a set of consensus standards which are accepted by the environmental laboratory community and by government. And they put these, as I said, into the EPA to run the program. And we in Oregon have the option of becoming the recognized accrediting authority for environmental labs in Oregon that want access to NELAP. And there are some very important business reasons, which I can go into in a moment, which make this desirable for our environmental labs in the state. And the regulated community supports our getting NELAP recognition so that they can get accreditation. The way this will work is that accreditation for drinking water labs, the ones that the Health Division is currently licensing, or certifying rather, will continue to be required. In other words, we would accept this NELAP accreditation in lieu of our current program so that there would be no increase of the regulatory burden beyond what the EPA is already requiring. It's mandatory now if you want to test public drinking water supplies, and it would continue to be mandatory. However, for all the other kinds of environmental testing, particularly those programs like the Clean Water Program and hazardous waste programs that DEQ regulates, it would be voluntary. And the DEQ would provide the accreditation for those laboratories that wanted accreditation for those kinds of tests. Both the DEQ and the Health Division currently have the statutory authority that we need to apply to be the NELAP accrediting agencies. We're not here asking for that statutory authority. We already have that, and there's, to my knowledge, no controversy about that at all. What we do want to do, however, is join forces to create a single point of entry for laboratories, private environmental labs in our state that want to get this accreditation so that we can avoid duplication. In other words, we want to create an accrediting authority, an entity where any private environmental lab that wants to get accreditation for a broad range of chemistry and microbiology tests can do so with a single application, with a single administrative structure, without duplication of staffing and so forth. And that's what this bill is about. As I said, we want this to be as efficient as possible, and we're proposing the creation of this NELAP accrediting authority that would include representatives from the Health Division, DEQ, and the State Department of Agriculture. The Health Division under this bill would provide the administrative staffing and support, and we would adopt the administrative rules under the statutory authority which we're seeking here, which would allow us to collaborate with the other agencies. The standards for accreditation would not exceed those adopted by the national NELAP body. The Health Division would have the authority to collect fees from laboratories that seek accreditation, and those fees would not exceed the cost of administering the program. And what we would do then is share those fees. We would parse them out according to the requirements of the other agencies so that all three agencies would be involved in the policy making and the decisions about accreditation and the inspection of labs and so forth in our respective areas of expertise. Right now, for the drinking water program, which has been a very successful collaboration, none of the three agencies have all the expertise they need to do the chemistry inspections and the microbiology inspections, so we've pooled our efforts and we have interagency agreements that allow us to work together on this, and it's worked very well for many years in Oregon. Just to wrap up, I'll say, as I said earlier, there would be some important business advantages for Oregon labs, which would become NELAP accredited. They'll be able to do business in other states without being accredited separately by those states, because this will have reciprocity throughout the United States. And it will become recognized internationally, really, as an accreditation that's going to be required probably to do business. And it will be completely voluntary for the non-drinking water components, but we also think that it's going to be desirable. And the environmental laboratory community itself has stepped forward and said this is something that they would like to have very much. So just to summarize, the passage of House Bill 2177, engrossed, would allow the development of an efficient, unified program, which will help us ensure that the environmental decisions that are made about how to manage hazardous waste or quality of streams or whatever in Oregon are made based on sound lab results while also enhancing business opportunities for Oregon laboratories.
Can you give me are other states doing, since there's reciprocity, I assume that other states are doing this?
Senator Chutab, yes. Right now, as a matter of fact, EPA is beginning the implementation of this, and there's been quite a flurry of states applying to become the recognized accrediting authority. And I don't know the exact number, but I think it's probably about half the states right now have applied, and we anticipate that most of the rest of the states will apply during the next couple of years.
And do you have any idea what, at this point, the fee will be? I know the bill says it won't exceed the cost of administering the program, but do you have an idea what that might be? I was thinking, the reason I asked that first question was if other states are set up, you might have an idea, but if they're just applying, they might not be set up for that either.
Senator Chutab, as a part of the fiscal impact statement for this bill, we developed a matrix of fees, and these were only an estimate because we had to do them really well in advance of knowing what our costs would be. But the application fee for relatively small environmental labs in Oregon would be about $500. For the larger labs, it would be about $1,500 for application, and then there would be accreditation fees on top of that, depending on how many different areas they wanted to be accredited in. For example, if they only wanted accreditation to test for pesticides, that would be another $500, and if they want trace metals, that would be another amount, and so on and so forth. This is really still to be negotiated. It would have to be established through the Senate Bill 333 process and administrative rule, and we just made an estimate, but that's about the right range, I think, and I think that's very equivalent to other states at this point.
And then one other question. In Section 4, it discusses the whole idea of, figuring out what that fee will be and then having the Department of Administrative Services approve it. And maybe you stated here that they must report to the appropriate legislative committee before implementing the fee. I don't actually see that wording in Section 4, but I could be reading it wrong. is it your understanding you would come not just get permission from DAS, but also receive approval from a specific committee, the appropriate committee?
Senator Tutu, Ms. Archer may be able to answer this question better than I can, but it's my understanding that we would follow the Senate Bill 333 process, and we would come back and ask for ratification just like we're about to for House Bill 5030, I think.
And the appropriate committee is the Ways and Means Committee during the session.
Okay.
In a bill such as we have right here.
Okay, and during the session. Okay.
Yeah.
So it doesn't happen through the emergency board?
I don't even have a copy of the bill right now. It's not attached to my material, so I've got to find it. But the, yes, I apologize, you're right. There is a section someplace that talks about in return to the appropriate committee, and that would be in the process of doing returning and
same
format there.
Madam Chair, is that on page 2, lines 14 through 16?
Well, no, that's what I've...
They're reporting
to the appropriate legislative committee. But
yeah, that's what Peggy just said, I believe.
Yes, uh-huh. The Department of Administrative Services approves, and then they report.
Yes. So there is no approval by the...
In this particular, well, it's an administrative function, administratively set fees, so they will automatically have to come back because of Senate Bill 333 to a committee such as this. This section in the bill implies that they're going to have to come back during the interim and report on it before they impose it, but that's the way I read it anyway.
Okay. Other questions?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
Whoever is
George.
Go ahead.
And then Representative George.
I have a question. Currently, the first Department of Division of Food Inspection left, and I'm just very familiar with the Department of Agriculture and the inspections they do. So many health inspections are actually done by them. They inspect things such as scale. A lot of measuring devices, technical devices, and they do an excellent job, I believe, in inspecting. And I'm just wondering, are they all in agreement that these folks, it appears to me that these folks are going to set you up to lead agency?
The Cherokee Sub, Senator George, yes, they are. And I don't see Norma Corison here today. She's the director of the laboratory in the Department of Agriculture, and she's been an integral part of developing this bill, and they've testified in support of it. What we would be doing as the lead agency really is convening a group of equals. We would be receiving applications and receiving money and providing the overall generic administration of the program, but the expertise and the scientific administration would reside in all three of the agencies, and we've written a bill carefully so that it would require the concurrence of the agencies. And the Department of Environmental Quality is represented here by Rick Gates, the director of their laboratory. I can't speak for them, but they've been a very important part of this throughout.
Go ahead, Senator.
The thing that maybe leaned that direction after the question was, when we were looking at Senate Bill 1028 and we were asking the three agencies who have major labs, it appeared to me that the Health Department of Human Resources has the least of all the labs, and yet you're going to appear to be the preeminent position. And is that the case?
Chair Chutub, Senator George, in terms of involvement with environmental testing, we do have the least involvement in environmental testing areas. However, we have been the agency for many years that has been administering the drinking water laboratory certification program, and Dr. Irene Ronning has been the person in charge of that for some time with great success. And we feel that we are doing a great job in carrying out that program, and it would carry forward. And both the EQ and the Department of Ag have agreed to that arrangement.
Senator George, may I add that currently we have the computer system that's set up for licensing and certifying the drinking water labs, and we also license all of the clinical labs in the state. So the process of giving labs blind samples and having them report what they find and of checking people's continuing education and so on is something that we do now also for the medical labs of the state. So it's a, maybe it's like the difference between actually performing environmental tests and licensing laboratories. And we, I believe, are the state's experts in licensing laboratories.
Okay. Question is this, and that is under current law, it seems to be like I mentioned, you know, petroleum distributed, and we go out and we measure to make sure when you sell a gallon, you sold a gallon, and then we even test sample stool to make sure that it's pure. Is there, from what I understand the testimony, there is no check like that for existing laboratory functions now. You don't go out to certify yet the fact the test was accurate.
Senator George, it's my understanding that's correct, and that except for drinking water testing, anyone can open an environmental laboratory in Oregon and use any method they want with any kind of quality assurance and any kind of reporting and any kind of computer system and make any claim that they want without any kind of accreditation. And I want to use the word voluntary one more time. I've used it six times and counting so far, but I want to make sure that you understand that, it will still be possible to do all that. In Oregon, because we're not asking for licensure of those laboratories, but we'll make it possible for those laboratories that want a Yellow Pages ad that says accredited by NELAB to have that.
I wanted to ask your collaboration with all of these other agencies. We're adding two FTE. Does that mean that some of the testing then that has been done by other agencies and now assumed by you, would that reduce the FTE then that in the other areas that are doing some of this testing?
Chair Qtub and Representative Loken, we won't be doing any testing. This is strictly a regulatory or voluntary accreditation type program.
Right.
And that it's actually 1.5 FTE, and those will be necessary just to handle the administrative burden of the program for expanding it to include a lot of new laboratories beyond just the drinking water labs, and also, to do more inspections. The health division itself will be doing more microbiology inspections in non-drinking water areas.
Mm-hmm.
And let me be quick to add that this is neutral for FTE, though, because in other areas of our budget, as I think you'll be hearing tomorrow probably, we are losing FTE as well. So this doesn't represent even a net increase for the public health laboratory in FTE.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, if I may. But what is the involvement, then, of other agencies in this program?
Representative Loken, the way this would work is if you're operating an environmental laboratory and you would like this accreditation, you would apply to an entity that we will call the Oregon, actually we're going to call it OREELAP, I think, the Oregon Environmental Laboratory Accreditation Program, and it would be received by the health division. It would be reviewed for completeness, and then if you are applying to do testing where DEQ has expertise in the science, that your application would be forwarded to DEQ. And if it was an area like pesticides where the Department of Agriculture has the expertise, it would be forwarded to them. If it's microbiology, the health division would do it. And, then the agency would do the on-site inspection, the evaluation of the quality control materials and so forth to assure that in that area the laboratory met the standards. And then the health division would be the focal point, would be the lead agency only in the administrative sense. And you would receive your accreditation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that as it's working now, though, everybody is doing this whole process within their own agency, or they're not doing it at all?
Representative Loken, at the present time, only drinking water laboratories get any kind of certification at all.
Okay.
And we have a model that's very similar to the one I just described, with the health division being the lead agency, having the statutory responsibility to certify those labs. We actually have interagency agreements with DEQ and with the Department of Agriculture to retain them and their inspectors to go out and do these inspections on behalf of the program. And we meet with them regularly, and we make sure that everything's being done according to the EPA standards and so forth. That way, the health division doesn't have to go out and hire more chemists. When the chemists are already in-state government and have the expertise and work with these tests every day, and they can consult and help and work with the laboratories that are seeking certification much better than we could.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a good collaborative program right now.
Mm-hmm.
Lab people tend to get along with one another pretty well.
Well, that's good. Representative Strobeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this for the NELAP seal of approval, does that expand the number of labs that could do drinking water testing then? If anybody that has that sticker, do they then qualify to be a drinking water lab?
Senator Kutub, Representative Strobeck, only if they get NELAP approval specifically in drinking water. There will be a range of several different categories of NELAP approval, and drinking water will be one of them. So I would not expect that this would expand the number of labs beyond the current number in Oregon, which is, I think, 48 labs that do drinking water testing.
Okay. So then you had earlier mentioned that some companies might like to have this if they could stick it in their Yellow Pages ad, say we're certified, but wouldn't they also, wouldn't the public have to know for what program they are certified in order to make an informed judgment about using them?
Representative Strobeck, yes, I think they would. And it's raised an interesting point. I don't know how they'll approach the advertising. I can tell you now, though, that there have been environmental laboratories that say in their Yellow Pages ads, literally, approved by the Oregon Health or certified by the Oregon Health Division, which implies that they're certified for everything that they do by us. But, in fact, it's only for drinking water. And, in fact, they're trying to sort of use that glow for many of the other things that they do.
Then, one follow-up, and I would suggest in implementing this through the administrative rule process that when you get this, that you inform both the companies that receive this that they can't just say NELAP certified, that they have to say NELAP certified for drinking water or environmental testing or whatever it is that they're certified for, so that it doesn't just become an automatic blanket stamp of approval that implies state support for everything that they're doing.
And I was going to address that sort of issue, too, to ask the question, are there any other entities that have, either through registration or anything, given some sort of stamp of approval where somebody may try to, through their advertising or whatever, indicate that they had certification. And the reason I ask that, and I think the point that Representative Strobeck brought up, is that if they do advertise and have the seal of approval, that they need to mention the area. But if there's any other entity that is sort of giving a stamp of approval, even in the past, that rules be very carefully written, because it looks to me like in Section 6 that, the civil penalties are pretty stiff. They can't exceed $500 a day, and the assistant director may impose the penalty without a hearing. And they have to be notified 5 days prior to that. But I guess my point is that since those are going to be imposed fairly easily by the assistant director, and even if they had notice, I'm just thinking of a situation where there was a federal act that made real estate appraisers become accredited or certified, and there were other entities that called you certified, and if you advertised yourself as certified, and that meant through the federal act, you had to be certified through that act and not through some other entity. And I just want to avoid a stiff penalty for somebody who may innocently be advertising themselves as somebody who has an accreditation of some type under this program. So whether there's any kind of entity out there doing that right now or not, maybe it's a moot point if there isn't anybody else. But I just would urge caution there, because this bill is pretty liberal in the civil penalty area as far as being able to attach a civil penalty.
Okay. Madam Chair, I think that, that also, that that civil penalty provision is current law, is it not?
Mm-hmm. But the fact that we're bringing more laboratories in and giving opportunity for accreditation will broaden. It's definitely going to be broadening the fact that there's a civil penalty that, that could be imposed. So.
Senator Yee? Mm-hmm. I want to know, why do we involve the Department of Agriculture when Health Division DEQ can set health standards?
Chairman Q-Tub, Senator Yee, the reason is that the Department of Agriculture Laboratory has people who are very expert in testing environmental samples for pesticide residues and some other things that neither DEQ nor the Health Division laboratories have the expertise in. And it's very important to have them in the partnership because they have something very important to offer in the way of not only helping regulate and provide oversight to these accredited laboratories, but also to assisting them. Quite often what will happen is if a lab is having trouble getting a method started or something is going haywire with it, they'll call one of our folks and say, I'm having trouble with method number 506 or benzene or whatever, and then they provide expertise. And that's where the expertise is for part of this program is in ag.
Oh, I didn't realize they have a lab that tests pesticide residues.
It was a very good one.
Mm-hmm. Further questions? Okay. I'm sure just one other comment that's in response to your earlier question about their reporting to the appropriate legislative committee, which is kind of vague and leaves it up to which committee you come that they come to. I would imagine that that language may have been put in that section because there were the three entities working together, and there probably was going to be some sign that there had that they had developed their budget and their need cooperatively, and that they all agreed on it. I don't know that I wasn't in the substantive committee, but that would make sense that they might have wanted some kind of preview and clarification that everybody agreed.
Senator Kutub, I actually don't remember that being discussed. I think it was just drafted by legislative council this way, to be honest. I think that's what happened.
Well, I think it's a good idea.
I'm sure it's in the bill, so it must be a good idea.
Okay, if there are no, if there's no further discussion, are there, Representative,
are we in work session?
No.
We are in public hearing. Anybody else here to testify on this particular bill?
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher?
These aren't some of the labs that have discovered that all of our streams are polluted, are they?
They'd be different labs because they're going to be new labs. And but DEQ and the Department of Agriculture are going to help set the, well, they're not setting standards because NELAP, are they setting the standards with the help of NELAP or what?
Sure, Q-Tub, Senator Fisher, let me see if I can answer your question. If not, DEQ is here and can maybe answer better than I. But the NELAP standards are national consensus standards for the accreditation of environmental labs to test streams and to test hazardous waste and toxic waste and all sorts of different things. We, under this bill, would not exceed the EPA requirements that's in the law, in the bill, and we would hold those laboratories to that accreditation standard. Now, as to whether these are the labs that are finding that the streams are polluted at the moment, I don't know who's doing the testing. I don't know if that's being done by the DEQ laboratory or by private laboratories. I don't have any knowledge of that. You want testimony on that, Mr. Madam Chair?
Madam Chair, my question is a little
bit. I thought it might be, so probably not. Representative Wilson, did you have another
question? Well, I have a little concern about the point you brought up, Madam Chair, and that's in Section 6, Sub 2, imposing a penalty without a hearing. And did I hear that it only requires a 6-day notice? That a penalty like this will be imposed. I guess I'm wondering what chance does the person having that penalty imposed upon him have to vindicate himself or to plead his case?
Anyone tell me that?
Madam Chair, Representative Loken, when this bill was drafted, it was placed in the existing statutes of the Health Division for drinking water. And the area that we're venturing into now is really beyond my expertise in terms of the law. I'm not an attorney, but I can tell you that the Assistant Director for Health has had this authority for some time. I can't speak to whether or not she has ever exercised this authority, but I can tell you that the entire regulatory posture of the Health Division, since I've been working for them since 1984, has been to work with people to bring them along to improve what they're doing, not to drop the hammer on them and start fining them. We have been criticized at times in areas for not fining people enough, as a matter of fact. And I think you can be sure that the Assistant Director for Health, who is sitting right here, would never precipitously levy a fine on somebody without due process. I can just tell you that if I'm administering this program and Ellie Hall is the Assistant Director for Health, that isn't going to happen.
My concern would be that we are, this was existing language for an existing program. This is really broadening. It is a much broader program. And now you have cooperation with two other agencies that I don't think are quite as reluctant to impose fees and are civil penalties. And I don't know, will they have any voice in this at all? They're helping to create the standards and setting forth those the standards for this. Was this discussed in the substantive committee?
Madam Chair, it did not come up in the substantive committee. I can say, though, that neither DEQ or Ag has any civil penalty authority under this law. I mean, it would have influence in making recommendations to the Health Division, but the Assistant Director for Health is the one who would have the authority under this act to levy civil penalties.
Senator Fisher.
Most of it's just civil penalties when I'm on the spot. This gives them 5 days notice. They can't do anything until they give them 5 days previous notice. This is actually a benefit to them, not a limitation.
Well, but you normally have a hearing, and that doesn't
be
done. You don't?
No. You get a hearing, you don't like what you've been walked with.
Okay. Stand corrected.
I would just say that, I think there's a pretty important level of trust that people have, especially for testing drinking water and for some of these other things, too, and that the presence of a potential fine is there in order to maintain compliance with the good standards. I mean, I think the people of the state ought to feel that there's a substantial threshold for a lab like this to get over, and they would want to be protected. So I think this is an appropriate continuation.
I would agree, Representative Strobeck, particularly with drinking water. But again, we're broadening this a whole lot, and it is just as important.
But we also
probably
make policies and levy a lot of other penalties to industry and private residences based on whether they've polluted the groundwater and streams and so forth. So I do think it's important to make sure that the labs that are doing this are first class.
Chair Tita, may I just, this may help. Just want to point out that this would not be a civil penalty for any lab that's not doing things according to NELAP standards. This is only a civil penalty for labs that report themselves as being NELAP accredited, but who are not.
Okay.
Right. That's what the civil penalty is for.
Okay. There's no further discussion under the public hearing. I will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2177. A.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ross.
I would move that we send House Bill 2177A to the full committee with DUPAS recommendation.
Representative Ross has moved House Bill 2177A to the full committee with the DUPAS recommendation. Discussion?
I have an objection. I'm going to object on this. I don't like imposing such heavy fines without a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care whether it applies to this agency or any other agency. I think there is a fairness issue here, and we ought to have hearings, even if we are already imposing fines without hearings. That's not right.
Okay.
I'm a no.
Okay. Representative Wilson is a no. Any other objections? Hearing and seeing none, let the record show that Representative Loken is a no on the House bill, and we need the carrier. Let's see. It's going to have to be Representative. Well, I guess, and you can do it on the floor.
For the companion pieces.
Right, okay. And on the Senate floor?
Okay.
Okay. Senator Yee will carry on the Senate floor. All right, Madam Chair, the next bill is House Bill 5030, which is the bill that we were referring to earlier when we talked about having to come back and get legislative approval for administratively established fees during an interim. What I have passed out is a spreadsheet that I did that I don't know if it makes it any easier to read than simply looking at the bill or not, but it made me remember what was going on, I guess, doing it. What this does is show what the fee is, who pays it, the approximate number of payers, what the previous rate was, which in subsection 1 is nothing because those are new fees, the current rate, the date that it was changed, the estimated revenue to be received, and what the revenues are expended for. And this should mirror the fees that are described in the bill itself. You also have received or should have received a letter requesting amendments to the bill. And then there's a letter right now that's just been handed out that I haven't seen before, so I don't know what it is.
So it's our testimony.
Oh, okay. That's good. There are two letters attached to the spreadsheet I did. One is dated April 12th, and that was simply a letter that I had received early on, noting that there would be an adjustment in requested to the Sanitarian Registration Board exam fee, and then a fee in a bill dated today that talks about that change in addition to a hearing aid fee change that they would be proposing that the bill be amended to add those.
Okay. Thank you. For the record, I'm Eleanor Hall, the Administrator of the Health Division. And I'm testifying on support of House Bill 5030. This is a bill that ratifies fees that were increased or changed during the last biennium pursuant to Senate Bill 333. And in that situation, we have the ability to hold a public hearing and change fees by rule, but we must return to the legislature for ratification of those fees if they are to continue into the next biennium. So for the most part, these are fees where the Health Division has already presented the information to the Department of Administrative Services and received their approval, published the proposed changes as changes to the administrative rule, notified the affected parties by letter, held a public hearing, and then made a decision to proceed. These fees generally are currently in place and are being charged and are incorporated in the governor's recommended budget. If this bill were not to be approved, we would have to go back to the previous fees. We should not keep these fees in place. But I hope you will agree that these fees are valid and warranted and serve their purposes. In other words, they're a little bit different in the bill than they are in your chart that you have. And I've attempted to see my testimony to the bill. And I started out by talking about the clandestine drug labs changes. Clandestine drug labs, when they're cleaned up, participate in a process with the Health Division that includes several steps. And we have struggled with how to make these fees fair and affordable. And last February, we changed the fees, February 98, to more closely match the cost of each unit of service and, in effect, also decrease the total fees for anyone to get through the process. The most significant...
Senator Fisher, excuse me, Shield.
What's his name?
Yeah.
You're using a very nice term here, some dust in George Lab cleanup. Is this a meth lab?
Senator Chubb and Senator Shield, yes, for the most part.
That's up to the checkout. We're cleaning up a mess.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, committee members and Senator Chubb, the landlord is responsible for cleaning up the mess if they wish to be able to rent their property again. And when they have a clean piece of property, we issue a certificate of fitness, which also grants them immunity from future suits from anyone who lives in the property and claimed that they got sick because they were in a chemically contaminated property. State statute says if you've secured a certificate of fitness, you are immune from those suits. So property owners get some benefit, as well as people who might later live in a property that may have been grossly contaminated with very toxic chemicals. But it can often, this has been a struggle for some landlords to afford, and in some cases there have been controversies, and we have tried to make the program better by changing the fees, and we do think we have succeeded. Since we changed the fees last February, over a year ago, we've had almost zero complaints about the fees, and we're getting more people participating in the cleanup process, which we think is good overall for the health of the public. In the past, people who went through the entire process might pay as much as $1,500 for a site assessment, a work plan compliance, a certificate of fitness, and so on. Now then, under these new fees, they would pay $100 less. Probably the biggest reduction in fees has to do with the people who have very little contamination. In the past, they may have ended up paying $1,500. We've reduced the fee by 66%. To $500. Because we are having more permits processed, even though we're collecting a lower amount, we are still able to cover the cost of the program, and it's a more efficient program. So at some point when people ask you, why don't they ever lower fees, you can say that we did. Today, June 8th. The public health laboratory fees, we are looking at some changes. We are adding some new fees, and we're changing one existing fee. We're increasing the fee for virus isolation by $1.25 from $33.75 to $35. That's just to keep up with inflationary costs. The new fees that we're adding have to do with services that we're now providing for local health departments and community partners, such as migrant clinics, where it's not appropriate to use general funds or federal funds to do the test, and where we want to be able to charge them. And we give a couple of examples. If a county health department, for instance, wants to screen its nurses or community firefighters or to offer a service to correction officers around, for instance, hepatitis B, we can now perform this service for them at a reasonable charge. And it's up to them whether they choose to use our lab and whether they think our fees are competitive. But it enables us to do that by having these fees established in statute. And there's a couple of these. There's the hepatitis acute panel, hepatitis B, ruling out flu culture, certain kinds of syphilis screens, and virus special tests. And we have been charging these fees since April of 1998. In the area of emergency medical services, EMS licensing fees, we license the EMTs and the paramedics of the state and charge a recertification and initial certification fees. The fees have not been increased since 1991, and this spring we did hold hearings to increase the fees. At the same time, the EMS community has asked for a more service-oriented approach from our EMS office, and we have endeavored to provide that. We received support from all the major EMS agencies in the state, including the Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Ambulance Association, and the State Emergency Medical Services Committee. The new fees are for the period beginning July 1st, but we have already been collecting them for most of the people who've been applying to be recertified or to have their licenses extended for the next biennium. EMTs who work for volunteer fire and ambulance services can ask to have their licensing fees waived, and we do that for people who are contributing their services to their community as opposed to using their certificates to earn a living. We also have some proposed fee changes and increases in the health licensing office fees. Generally, these fees are increasing because we use national exams that are prepared by a national group, and they charge us to use those national exams. And we have several situations where the charges are going up for the national exams. That is the case with the Sanitarians Registration Board, we also are having some administrative costs for handling the Sanitarians Registration Exam that are specified by the National Environmental Health Association, NEHAW. In the Hearing Aid Dealer Licensing Program, the examination fee, again, is increasing from $80 to $120, but this is purely a pass-through to the people at the International Hearing Society who set the cost for the exam to test applicants in Oregon. In these changes for the Health Licensing Office, there are advisory boards or policy boards that are involved with each one of these professions, and they have previously written the chair in your committee saying that they have reviewed and supported and see the importance of having these higher fees. So they have supported and in many cases taken that action themselves to increase the fees in the interim. I would be glad to answer any questions you may have about House Bill 5030. I also have staff from the specific program areas who would be available should you get into the really detailed areas.
Sure. I have two questions. I wanted to ask you about the clandestine drug lab or the meth lab. And it was a little distressing to hear the reason for the ability to reduce that is because you're doing so many of these, which means there's so many drug labs. My question is, do you have any records that indicate if these are occurring with the same property owners or landlords mm-hmm. over and over again?
And I say one of the reasons, Chair Kutub and Representative Sturbeck, one of the situations that's gone on is we've had a big backlog of properties where the fire departments or police have put the property on the list as being a clandestine drug lab, but the landlord has not chosen to pursue a certificate of fitness. So they're not required to clean it up unless they want to rent it again. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that there have been more labs that have been identified. It may just mean that people are taking care of the problems now and are more willing to work with our program to get that certificate of fitness. And maybe I can have Tom Johnson, the Environmental Health Director, answer the question about are these the same properties, same landlords that are reappearing on several occasions.
Sure. Keith Hubbs, Representative Schroebeck. Again, for the record, my name is Tom Johnson. I'm an Assistant Administrator for the Oregon Health Division. We do not have any evidence of that. In fact, anecdotally, our observation is that once a landlord goes through this, and it, probably the average is about $5,000, maybe more for them at the total cost to clean up. They're very, very careful who they rent to, so there is no evidence of repeat.
That's good. I just it just raised a red flag with me when you first said that, and I was thinking, great if we're reducing the fee, but we're finding that it's the same landlords over and over again, and that would not be a direction that I would want to go, but if that's not the case, then I'm okay with that. And my other question was, what is the... as you turn the page of the Advisory Council for Electrologists and Permanent Color Technicians and Tattoo Artists Demonstration Permit Application. That's a mouthful.
I'd like to ask Sue Wilson, who's the manager for the Health Licensing Office, to explain this.
Okay.
Chair Kutub and Representative Strobeck. This is the result of a law that was implemented in 1995.
Identify yourself for the record.
Excuse me, I'm Sue Wilson. I'm the Administrator for the Health Licensing Office. The bill that was passed in 1995 was to regulate tattoo and permanent color technicians. As a result of having regulation for the past two biennia, the members of that industry have come to our office and have indicated that they need a temporary license in order to demonstrate at carnivals, fairs, and those sorts of more popular places to demonstrate the tattoo procedure. Our office, under the advisement of this group and the advisory council, then implemented a fee that would cover the cost of our inspection crew visiting and the fairs and making sure that they were following the standards that are required for sterilization and one-use needles.
So these people who are doing it are already licensed, but this is just a site inspection for a temporary site.
And it is Utah's representative, Strobeck. That's correct.
I'd like to ask the question about page 2, lines 10. 9 and 10, it talks about the clandestine drug lab program and a $900 fee increase. How is it that we lowered it and raised it at the same time?
Chair Keetub and city members, the bill only shows you the fees that are going up. We are able to lower the fees in some other parts of the program administratively without putting them into the bill. So in the past, we charged $1,200 for the certificate of fitness, and now that will be going down, while the plan review, which is where we spend more time and work, is going up. So we really need to have the program sort of taken as a whole and look at each step of the program, and that's why we presented the information about the total process fee. Used to be $1,500, and now it will be $1,400. And people who do not need a program work plan review will not have to pay anything for that.
For the 9 and the 3?
Yes.
Okay. Because I was going to, you mentioned reducing the, well, Senator Shields isn't here, and you mentioned the reduction of this particular plan, and then you also mentioned landlord, and because what this fee is imposed upon actually the property owner, who in many cases has no idea that this property is being used for a drug lab, and then they're slapped with this fee for the cleanup, which somebody has to pay for the cleanup. I just wish that this was imposed upon the offender, not the property owner who innocently rented his property to some irresponsible law-breaking person who then does a meth lab in their property. So I'm glad to see that people are getting it cleaned up. But this isn't really germane to this particular fee bill, but do you know what they can collect from that individual, if they have the ability to collect at all any of the money back from the...
Senator Chitub, we have worked extensively on this issue during the session in the interim, because indeed there are some landlords who end up being very victimized by bad renters. Often the landlord can collect from their property owner's insurance, both for the cleanup and for the fees. In some situations, I believe that they have also been able to collect from their tenants.
Again, for the record, Tom Johnson, Assistant Administrator, Oregon Health Division. Chair Keetub, they certainly have that legal right. And in some instances, these individuals have enough resources to make it worthwhile. However, I think it's fair to say that in most instances, these renters don't have enough personal resources to make that legal action worth the effort.
Because, of course, when you're doing illegal activity, you don't actually tell people that you have the resources, so
and keep them booked.
They're under the mattress, probably, or somewhere else. So.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know if you heard that. That was why I questioned about the repeat landlords. But the testimony of Mr. Johnson was that generally it's not, and once a landlord has had to go through this, they're a lot more careful about who they rent to.
Madam Chair.
Senator Fisher.
One thing concerned me about instead of him mulling it over after Representative Strobeck asked his question, it was mentioned that they don't have to clean up this by law.
Madam Chair and Senator Fisher, that's true. By law, if they choose to leave the property idle, vacant, and no one inhabits that property, they may leave it and not have it cleaned up. only if they choose to re-rent or in some way have humans inhabit that property are they required to clean it up. They can't use it for any other purpose that involves humans, but if they choose not to, they can leave it uncleaned up.
Can they live in it themselves?
No.
No.
If, as long as there's human habitation, they have to clean up.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Why would not they be involved in getting it cleaned up and then leave it?
Chair Akita and Senator Fisher, sometimes some landlords honestly themselves don't have the wherewithal to fund the cost of the cleanup. Sometimes it ranges up to $20,000 to clean it up. Perhaps they don't have, they're older and they just don't have interest in it. They don't want to do it. There are probably many reasons, but unfortunately there are a number of sites. I don't have the exact number, but we can get that for you. We have elected not to clean up.
Senator Fisher.
And these sites that vacant, so are going to be torn down, or what's the...
Madam Chair, Senator Fisher, it really has to stay vacant. One of the methods that is a legitimate method of cleanup is to tear it down and razz it and burn it. That needs, of course, approval from the fire marshal and our oversight as well, but that is one method. But if you don't go through an approved process of cleanup, then it has to remain idle. Unchanged.
I guess, Madam Chair, it just seems rather strange to me that because I rather doubt that I haven't seen any assessors popping up here volunteering to say that when that happens, that they don't assess the property. And as long as you're going to have to pay property taxes, it would seem to me like there wasn't going to be much future in paying property taxes and wanting to set on.
Yeah, I actually served on the Asset Forfeiture Oversight Committee during the interim and learned a little bit about this. And I think it is true that sometimes the cleanup is more than an owner can bear, and even the tax burden is less than having to clean up the piece of property. And they maybe let it sit to see if there's a possibility down the road, maybe either to collect some funds, maybe from the tenant somehow, or you know, they're waiting either to clean it up or bulldoze it, I think.
Madam Chair, Senator Fisher, I might add, too, that they can sell the property if they fully disclose.
Yeah.
Perhaps that's another reason, too, why they wait. Maybe they're looking for a seller.
Senator George.
I'm going to climb that off the high horse to ride this one out of town. And that is, it just seems like we have two classes of citizens in this country. We have those who have the privilege to break the law, to do a massive environmental damage, and then those other citizens who are responsible to pick up the mess, clean it up, and pay for it. And I hope that, for example, Madam Chair, you indicated you had knowledge about this. What would be the penalty for operating a half-rate of methamphetamine lab?
I'm sure there is a sentence of some kind for that individual.
Why would they do have a criminal amount of time that the person would spend cleaning up their property?
Might not be, because of the defense bar.
Madam Chair, Representative Blanca, one question. Quick question. I'm just looking at the hearing exam. And initial written examination, 175, a retake's the same. And, well, let's see, WWS, what does that stand for? Yeah, those also are initial. Excuse me, hearing aid dealer fees are 120 and a retake's 120. And then the WWS, and I'm not sure what that stands for, is 175 and the retake's 175. I guess I'm wondering not only what WWF is, but is a retake just as much work as
seeking the initial exam, and why does it have to be the same?
Senator Jubin, Representative Loken, WWS are wastewater sanitarians.
Oh.
It's a special category of registered sanitarians that was established in the previous legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
The key element of cost here is paying for the national exam. We use exams that have been verified and calibrated and developed nationally because we think they're more reliable in testing people and less subject to challenge. And that's the key thing that we're paying for in all of these exams, is paying to use these national tests.
Well, there is a follow-up.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you. There is a fee, though, for the hearing aid dealer fee is to recover national examination costs. So that's all right. I'm sorry. I see what you're doing there on that. So the fact, then, that you have to get another exam to retake it?
Yes. We have to pay again to get another exam and submit it and have it scored and graded again. And it has to be proctored again and mailed again under secure conditions. So it is very identical to the amount of cost for taking the initial exam. And I do understand why you were thinking the hearing aid dealer one was WWF. It comes after the sanitarians, but it's, you figured it out.
It is. Sorry.
Okay. If there are no further questions, I don't know, Peggy, but do you want to explain anything else in this chart? Help us. The only thing again to point out that the fees that are on the first page of my chart are the same ones that are on the first page of the bill. They are new fees. All of these fees are assumed in the governor's recommended budget because these are fee increases that took place during the interim, or fees that were imposed administratively during the interim. Other than that, I don't have anything else to offer.
Okay. What we'll do then is close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 5030.
Senator.
Representative Strobeck.
We first need to adopt these amendments, is that correct?
Yes, we would have to do that.
Okay, then I move that we amend House Bill 5030 as described in the letter from the Health Division of June 8, 1999, that would be on page 2, line 30, after WWS trainees, $175 to insert D, initial written exam fee, $175, E, retake written exam fee, $175, sub C, hearing aid dealer fees, A, initial written exam fee, $120, and B, retake written exam fee, $120.
Representative Strobeck has moved the amendments as they appear on the June 8th letter from the Oregon Department of, from the Health Division and the Department of Human Resources. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Strobeck.
I would move House Bill 5030 as amended to the full committee with a due process recommendation.
Representative Strobeck has moved House Bill 5030 as amended to the full committee for the due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion?
I hate voting for more fees, but I will vote yes.
Are there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, I hate voting for these fees too, but the Department of Administrative Services have some oversight over this, and there are letters of support in my file for the individuals that they are for, except for the property owners for the clandestine drug lab program. Hearing and seeing none, that motion passes, and we are adjourned for today. We will reconvene tomorrow at 3 o'clock.